In the meantime, if Captain Mark Helton was the boy wonder everybody said he was, he might just be JB's best shot of getting back to the railwag alive.
Dix!
The men climbed warily from the vehicles, clumsy in the suits and moving slowly to avoid snagging them on anything and risking a tear. That'd be a sweet death. Here we fucking go, JB thought.
Go forward and burn back some of that growth. The building we want is 20 yards in from the first one.
Right.
Wolf, go with him and cover him. And be careful.
Yes, sir.
The sec man's sullen response struck JB as less respectful than his own non-reg reply. JB trudged manfully forward. The flamethrower was heavier than he guessed it would be and made him feel clumsy and conspicuous. The captain deployed the remaining men in a firing line. Having 8 or 9 blasters pointed at his back made JB feel real special, but he had to admit the Magog bunch displayed decent fire discipline. Still, much as he hated to admit it, he wished Sergeant Banner was along. Nobody would dare risk a negligent discharge with that blood-drinking old bastard on the line. Wolf was a tall, lanky black guy with a rolling gait. He carried an M16 with an M203 40mm Gren launcher slung beneath the barrel. It was loaded with a multiple projectile, which in effect made it a giant shotgun. He was a kid from Seattle, with an attitude. He wasn't much impressed by killer weeds, despite the little incident with the blood flowers. He strolled out in front of JB. The armorer opened his mouth to warn him how triple stupid was to wander in front of the muzzle of a flamethrower. One of the plants stirred. A big pod, dark green with yellow stripes running to its underside, lifted up.
Oh, shit!
Its tip exploded. Hundreds of tiny pellets blasted out. Wolf took most of the charge. JB was in his blast shadow. The other projectiles spat harmlessly across what had been the parking lot. Wolf dropped his blaster and staggered back. He turned. The front of his rad suit was peppered with holes, black, but quickly going red. JB marveled that he was still on his feet. The sec man went to his knees. Tendrils were sprouting from Wolf's chest, nasty, pale things that became veined with red as they grew writhing, spreading red leaves. Wolf seemed to be trying to bat at his punctured chest, but wasn't in control of his arms. His body began to vibrate. He took a slow step toward JB. And another.
Fuck that.
JB aimed the flame nozzle at him and prepared to light him off. A blast from the side almost took off JB's head with overpressure and noise. Captain Mark stood at the armorer's side. At Helton's shoulder was the stubby blunderbuss shape of an M79 Gren launcher.
Bastard.
The triple-aught buck loaded in Helton's MP round shattered the visor of Wolf's helmet, preparatory to ripping it and his head clean off its shoulders. The headless body reeled back a step. Then, it advanced again.
Do it, Dix!
I got it!
Engulfed in orange fire and black smoke, Wolf kept walking forward, swinging his hips rather than his legs. The captain and JB moved to either side. Wolf passed blindly, walked half a dozen blazing steps toward the line of increasingly nervous squatties, and then collapsed. Helton had broken open his Gren launcher. It was really just a supersized break-action shotgun. He stuffed in a fat HE round and popped it into the vegetation.
Roger that. That's how it wants to play, that's how we play it. What the hell does she see in that loser?
Did you say something, Captain?
No, not a damned thing, armorer.
From then, it was a cakewalk. A cakewalk where a single misstep or bad break could fry your nuts, true, but that didn't happen. Helton and a couple of privates with M203s shattered the foliage in their path from a safe distance with launched high-explosive grins. Then JB torched the rudely pruned shrubbery. He was especially gratified when several of the blaster pod plants writhed in something like animal agony as they burned. Wolf had been a cocky prick and too stooped to live, but when it came to a fellow human versus militant mutey topiary, JB was clear which side he stood on. Once the weeds were well and truly whacked, Helton had the wags driven right up next to the bunkers. Then the team cautiously, but without further incident, penetrated the bunkers. The insides, as revealed by the beams of their helmet lamps, were well covered in mold of myriad colors. Unlike the plants outside, the mold displayed no kung fu fighting skills. At least it didn't resist as the rad-suited men went in and out toting old computer CPUs, as pointed out by Hubertus, the intel chief himself, who was Magog's resident living steel expert and had been sent to supervise this phase of the op. They piled a couple dozen boxes into the wags, then they drove back to Magog without incident, unloaded them into a special sealed compartment to be examined by techies. The rail wag was rolling as the men unsealed their suits. And that was Kansas City. The dark on the plains was so deep that only the polychromatic discharges within the seething, low-slung clouds provided any illumination to navigate by. Fortunately, steering wasn't much of an issue for the yawl. The tracks did twist and turn occasionally to pass low hills or ridges, the countryside having at last begun to show some relief again. Except when running fair before a favorable wind, which they didn't have now, they never went fast enough to worry about curves. As time ground on and they penetrated deeper into the Deathlands, Christy became almost feverish with anxiety to catch up with Magog. Fear beset her that whatever its crew might find in Kansas City might send it off in some random direction. Not even Paul's resourceful cunning and inexhaustible store of survival lore would enable the unprotected pair to follow the armored rail wag through the heart of the dead city and live. If they lost Magog here, they might never catch up with her at all. And so they were rolling on through the night, and crickets and creatures less identifiable sang to them as they passed. Night was the Technomad's natural domain. That's what Paul told Christy. So she insisted they put it to the test, pushing on as long as they could stand to, each taking turns peddling solo while the others slept, eating on the fly, stopping only to answer the call of nature, stretch aching legs, replenish their water tanks. Christy was half drowsing. She hadn't slackened in her peddling. She was almost able to do it in her sleep. At the moment, she could hardly feel her legs. She was surprised she didn't have thighs as big as barrels by now. Paul was, as always, indefatigable in two areas, peddling and talking. He was happily running his head on his favorite target, the history and lore of the rails, and how he fit into them, in however small a way.
Travel out on the rail line at night often enough, you'll see ghost trains. Mark my words.
What?
Ghost trains, I said, and ghost trains I meant. These tracks are haunted. Haunted by the ghosts of trains that plied them centuries ago.
That sounds unlikely.
Unlikely? Unlikely? So now you're the expert on railroads, I suppose, Missy. Some people. Teach them a little and they think they know all. Why, I'll have you know I've seen them my very own self.
Oh, come on.
It's true. I've seen them myself. Great hurtling black masses of shadow, complete with phantom air horns. You see them in the distance, maybe even feel the vibration on the tracks. And suddenly, they loom up over you like some kind of giant black sea wave, and your heart goes right up your throat, and you get ready to kiss your ass. Well, you reckon it's all over for you. And then, whoosh, it rolls right over you, doing no more than ruffling your hair. And then it's gone, leaving no trace, but maybe the dwindling, ghostly red glow of a lantern swinging at the rear of the caboose.
This happened to you, did it?
Many's the time. All right. Not but a few times, but I remember them well, you bet I do. I'll carry those memories to my grave. In fact, hear that?
What?
Don't you hear it? I think it's one now.
Don't be ridiculous.
She'd listened to, and told her share of, campfire ghost stories as a girl. She wasn't about to fall for whatever trick he had up his sleeve. Then she felt a tingling in her palms.
Paul, what's going on?
Shh! It's coming.
He was hopping around in his seat, as if he needed to pee immediately.
A ghost train's coming!
She could hear it now, a rushing sound like a wind whirling up. She turned in her seat, craned her head around, to see a beam of white light stab out across the terrain from behind a hill less than half a mile away. In a moment, the source appeared, inundating both of them with actinic glare.
The ghost train!
Ghost train my ass! Stop the yawl, Paul! Stop it now!
Stop us? Why?
That's no ghost, you rat-addled crazy! That's Magog!
He did a comical take from her to the train and back. Then he reached down and yanked the emergency brake. Christy thumped against the back of her seat. He was almost pitched out of his. At once, Christy was up and off the platform. The mighty train's approach was like an earthquake now. Paul had definitely been right about one thing. Having that thing rushing down on you, looming higher and higher in the night, was exactly like being on the business end of a tidal wave. Paul had snapped out of his religious trance, he caught the handhold at his end, and together they heaved the several hundred pounds of Yaw up and off the track. The god blasted by. The wind of its passage tumbled them down the embankment into a swamp. Fortunately, the water wasn't toxic and only ankle deep. Unfortunately, it was pretty stagnant. Feet sloshing in her boots, Christy slogged back up the bank. The train flashed by, car upon car. Almost mindless with urgency, she looked for some handhold, something she could grab onto and try to haul herself aboard.
Best not try it! She's going 70 at least! Lord, ain't she a beauty!
Christy lowered her arms to her side. They were rigid as bars of steel. When the last wag, the armored blaster car, had clattered past, she lurched onto the tracks and dropped to her knees. She felt Paul's hand gentle on her biceps.
Come on. Let's get the Yaw out of sight. Find us a place to catch some Z's.
No. Let's get the Yaw turned around and follow that son of a bitch.